This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, the weekend edition of Family Research Council's Washington Watch.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. I'm your host, David Salkeld, a constitutional conservative, husband, and homeschool dad. A little later on in the program, we'll be hearing from Representative Warren Davidson about how some members of the Senate Judiciary Committee seem to be applying a religious test for another of the president's nominees. Also, Representative Andy Harris joins Tony to talk about the debt ceiling bill. But first, while cleanup efforts continue along the Texas and Louisiana coast from Hurricane Harvey, Hurricane Irma has wreaked a path of destruction through the Caribbean and is now impacting the southeastern U.S. I urge you to keep these regions in your prayers and look for opportunities to help those impacted by these storm systems. One of the groups that helps those whose lives have been turned upside down by natural disasters is Samaritan's Purse. And on Thursday of this week, Franklin Graham, president of Samaritan's Purse, joined Tony to talk about their efforts in these hurricane-ravaged areas.
Franklin, thanks so much for joining us on Washington Watch today.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Tony, for letting me be with you.
Well, give us the latest on the efforts in the wake of Harvey and how things are going for Samaritan's Purse as you've got your units there operating in full swing.
We have our units up and running, and we will need about 1,000 volunteers a day. That would be for capacity if we were to work at capacity. And I think weekends will be at capacity during the week when or during the work day. We'll be somewhat less of that, but I think we'll be there probably for at least 2 years. What we're working on right now, Tony, is the mudding out of homes, houses that went underwater. You have to take all the contents that got wet. You have to take them out of the house. And basically, they're ruined. Not everything, but most everything. Your bedding's ruined. Your carpet's ruined. Many times, your floor buckles, and that has to come out. And then we take the sheetrock, the walls that got wet, we'll cut that out and take that out to the curb and then just have the exposed studs in the wall. And we spray it with an anti-mold solution and then let it dry. And then we'll come back several months later and if the people need help, help them again to put some of that back. But this is going to be a huge, huge project. And, of course, with the what's already taken place in the Caribbean, we're now in the process of putting together a response to Barbuda and also to St. Martin. Both of those islands, Barbuda was almost 90% destroyed. And the trouble is it's a small island with a little tiny airport, so we're going to have to take one of our bigger planes back and forth to San Juan, Puerto Rico, and then use one of our smaller cargo planes to help these smaller islands. But that's something we want to try to get done in at least the next 2 days.
Franklin, I mean, I know I was at the Department of Health and Human Services earlier today in their command center, and I mean, I know they're stretched with everything that's going on. I have to imagine that Samaritan's Purse, which is a nonprofit, completely funded, you know, with supporters who are giving money to help fellow Americans and others who you work all around the world. But in these disasters, people can give money directly to help Americans in the wake of these hurricanes. I would imagine your resources are being stretched right now.
Well, the biggest resource that's being stretched is just the manpower. We need more volunteers. God has provided us with the income for us to be able to respond right now for today. And we've got that, but we're going to need help for this next week when the hurricane comes ashore in Florida. That's a whole other dynamic, and we've got two trucks sitting ready to go to Florida if the need is there. And then, of course, responding to these islands, we need the finances as we go to these islands to help. But the biggest thing is people. We need hands. We need boots on the ground. And we need an army of volunteers. In Texas alone, we need 1,000 a day.
And folks, let me just say this, because the first phone call that I made after Baton Rouge and that surrounding area flooded a year ago was when I was out of house in temporary refuge in someone else's home. I called Samaritan's Purse, and within 3 days, Franklin's team was on the ground. And there is not a better organized organization in terms of if you want to make sure your time is going to be well spent. And Franklin, this is something when you talk about mudding out these houses. I've been a part of it. I've seen it. I've done it. Anybody and everybody can be a part of this because there's jobs for everybody.
No question. And last week we were in South Texas, and the Vice President Pence and his wife came by, and they spent a little time working with our volunteers, clearing brush. Everybody can do something, and that's what. But we just need people who are willing to come. And you can maybe give a day, maybe you can give a week. We have some people that that come down for 2 or 3 weeks and stay with us and work every day. But the need is great.
And working with the local churches, as you did with us in the Baton Rouge area, housing is provided. I mean, the dormitories. I mean, it's not like staying in a 5-star hotel, but they register through you. You take care of the food, you take care of the housing, so that it's just a matter of them coming down and being hands and feet of Jesus to help these people.
And that's the main thing I want to point out, Tony, is that we do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we do work through local churches. We work for local church because the local church knows the community. And they know the people that are in the worst of need. And so we partner with the churches, and they do. They give us the housing. We feed them. We put our food kitchens in if the church doesn't have a kitchen. We put in a shower trailer so there's extra capacity for showers. And we got a place for people to stay and be clean, and then we bring the managers in who go out into the community, canvass the community, and find the homeowners that are needing help, and they fill out a work order, and then we send a team to go work on that house and to fill out that work order. And when we're through with the work order, we get the homeowner, and we have prayer with them. We sign a Bible and give that to them as a gift to their home. And while we're working at home, we have chaplains from the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association who go in and just witness to the homeowner, pray with the homeowner as we're working. And lots of times these homeowners are wanting just to tell their story. But as they tell their story, it gives us an opportunity to find out where they are spiritually and then to challenge them if they know Christ. And if they don't, would they like to invite Christ to come into their hearts? And so everywhere we go, we have people accept Christ. And we see people who are born again. And that's what we want to do.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. My guest in this first segment, familiar voice, Franklin Graham with Samaritan's Purse. And Franklin, we had dozens through the course of the work that Samaritan's Purse and the Billy Graham Ministry did in the Baton Rouge area. We had dozens come to know Christ. We even had new people join our church as a result of the ministry of our partnership with Samaritan's Purse, which I know is your heart, is the ministries to come alongside the church and work with the church. Already you've seen over 100 professions of faith in the Houston area as a result of the work that's being done down there.
Yes, and one of the things we had in Houston were these shelters where people we're just waiting for the water to recede, and it gave us a lot of opportunities just to go into these shelters and talk to people, pray with them, counsel with them, but more importantly, be able just to share our faith with these individual people. And so God uses these opportunities for His good, and not that I'm saying these storms are good, but I think at the end results of a person's life is changed for eternity. This is good. And that's what we want to be a part of helping to change lives for eternity and introduce them to Jesus Christ, the Savior of our souls, our Redeemer. That's what we want to do.
And Franklin, I know you have been on the ground in each one of these. You try to go in and you're there. You were there in Houston, as you said, with the Vice President last week. You were in Baton Rouge with then Vice President nominee Pence and right. President nominee Trump when we were in Baton Rouge. And in these incidents, we often see the best of America in the worst of circumstances. I mean, the people who step up and help their neighbors, the heroic efforts that are undertaken. This really does speak to the goodness of the church in particular, but the society as a whole, there's a lot of good people out there.
We've got some amazing people in this country. And first of all, donors, people that I've never heard from before, don't know, that have just sent gifts in. Some are small, some are large. But people from across the country saying, we want to be a part of it, we want to help. And so I always thank God for these good-hearted people who open up their purses, open up their check accounts, and write checks that allow us to do the work that we do. Because when we respond, the federal government's not helping us.
Right.
It's individual people. It's Christians that across the country who say, we want to be a part of it. We can't be there, but here's my check. I hope it helps. So I'm very grateful for the donors. And then I'm so thankful and grateful for the volunteers, these men and women who come from around the country, pay their own expenses, come down for a day, a week. We've had some stay as many as a month or more, but it's wonderful people that just come together, and they want to come and help and make a difference in Jesus' name. And we see this goodness, this outpouring of compassion and love and generosity from across the country. Every state, as far as I know, has sent a gift that has participated. They're sending volunteers. And so, Tony, it always warms my heart when I see the outflow of love and compassion that comes from our country.
It does. It is in the midst of when we see incidents of a divided nation that we've seen in the last month or so, and then you see the outpouring of support and Americans coming together, rescuing strangers,
right.
It is in fact encouraging. And as a nation, the president calling us to prayer, look, there's a lot of bad things happening, but there's a lot of good things, and there's reason
yes,
for
sir.
Hope. Franklin, thank you so much for joining us. And let me tell you, we support the Samaritan's Purse and the work you do. I've seen it firsthand. We support it, and we're going to encourage people to volunteer and to give as well.
Thank you, Tony.
You can find out how to donate or volunteer when you go to samaritanspurse.org. Also, don't forget to stop by at tonyperkins.com and sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues of the day. Again, that's tonyperkins.com. Don't go away. We'll be right back to talk about Democrat efforts to keep Christians from holding public office.
The Center for Medical Progress continues to release shocking videos that expose the lies and crimes of Planned Parenthood. David DeLeiden, the heroic undercover journalist behind the videos, was recently exonerated from the charges filed against him. Come to Values Voters Summit to hear from David DeLeiden in person as he discusses his journey and the courage it takes to stand up for the unborn. With a new pro-life administration in place, America's primed for change. Seize the moment by attending this year's Values Voters Summit. VVS will give you the tools to inform and mobilize your community to protect the unborn and defund Planned Parenthood. Also, take advantage of this incredible opportunity to network with like-minded individuals. Invited and confirmed speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Michelle Bachmann, Secretary Ben Carson, Ambassador Nikki Haley, Senator Ted Cruz, Kellyanne Conway, Dana Lash, Franklin Graham, Ollie North, and many more. Join us at Values Voter Summit on October 13th through 15th in Washington, D.C. Register now at valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. Earlier this week, California Senator Dianne Feinstein and Illinois Senator Dick Durbin grilled federal judicial nominee Amy Barrett, demanding to know how her Catholic faith would influence her decisions from the bench. Does that cross the constitutional line about there being no religious test? Joining Tony to talk about it is Congressman Warren Davidson.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, it's nice to talk with you. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it appears both these senators have forgotten Article 6 in the Constitution that says there's no religious test shall ever be required as a qualification to any officer of public trust under the United States. Something wrong here?
Absolutely. And frankly, it follows upon Bernie Sanders doing the exact same thing with Russ Vought.
Yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Hey, by the way, I've got this clip, so our listeners know exactly what we're talking about. Let me play this clip, and then I get you to weigh in on it. Here was Senator Dianne Feinstein yesterday in the Judiciary Committee.
Why is it that so many of us on this side have this very uncomfortable feeling that, you know, dogma and law are two different things? And I think whatever a religion is, it has its own dogma. The law is totally different. And I think in your case, Professor, when you read your speeches, the conclusion one draws is that the dogma lives loudly within you. And that's of concern when you come to big issues that large numbers of people have fought for years in this country. I assume if both of you were on the lists that you would be a no vote on Roe. And that puts a number of us, just very honestly, in layman's language, in a very difficult position.
So, Congressman, in layman's language, it sounds as if you can't have religion and be a judge.
Yeah, well, according to Dianne Feinstein and others, apparently they have that concern that if you take your faith too seriously, well, that should be a disqualification from office, is apparently what they're hinting at there.
Now, Congressman, you yourself are a graduate of Notre Dame. I mean, this inquisition, I would have to think, hits pretty close to home.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm not a law background, but an MBA from there. And, you know, you spend a lot of things like how, frankly, like all Christians do, and frankly, faithful people of all faiths. You look at how do I integrate, how do I live my faith? And America has long since decided from our founding, frankly, pre-Constitution even, that this is part of who we are as a fabric, as a nation, as a people, and it's incorporated into the values that we've built into our Constitution. One, in the First Amendment, and second, in, you know, as you say, by reference to no religious tests. So they're really striking at, you know, what Barack Obama said he wanted to do is remake America. And that's what the far left, not liberals, far left people are pushing to do is remake America.
So, Congressman Davidson, what's the logical outcome of this line of questioning and opposition to candidates who have a religious faith that, as you say, they've integrated into their public life?
Well, I think it just shows how important it is for people to really do that and say, hey, it's not always going to be easy. Thankfully, we're not being fed to the lions or anything yet. And you go out there and live your faith. I think that Amy Barrett did a phenomenally good job of answering the questions tactfully, showing great patience. And I think it showed that she's got the kind of composure that will make her a tremendously effective judge. So I hope she's confirmed soon.
Yeah, she did handle it extremely well, just like Russ Vought did as when he was grilled by Bernie Sanders as the president's guy on the budget. I think this is troubling. I think the logical outcome of this in the mind of liberals and what they're trying to do is make it so that anyone of Christian faith in particular, that orders their lives according to their faith, which is what religious freedom is the ability to do that, will be barred from public service ultimately at every level.
And it's certainly already at the point where they're engaging in faith shaming, like, oh, how dare you be public with what you believe. And of course, that's not our sound doctrine for virtually every Christian, is of course you share your faith and you live it.
Yeah, because you would be hiding your light under a bushel if you did not, and I think someone said not to do that. Warren Davidson, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. Appreciate you being on today.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Representative Davidson when you visit tonyperkins.com. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, helping you stay informed on the issues that matter to you. You can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. When we come back, is the president working with Democrats on legislation? And if so, why?
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. In an interesting move on Wednesday, President Trump struck a deal with Democrat leaders on the debt ceiling, striking a bipartisan deal to boost borrowing and spending, keeping the government running into the next fiscal year. It also includes funding for disaster relief for Texas and Florida. Joining Tony to talk about this development is Representative Andy Harris.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, Tony.
All right, I know a lot of Republicans upset about the president making this deal yesterday, but is it in part because the Senate Republicans did not repeal Obamacare and the president had to go somewhere to get his agenda moving?
Well, it's not only the Senate Republicans, but the House leadership, I think, was leading us down that same path. We were going to get a debt ceiling, a more or less clean debt ceiling increase. We were going to get a CR, and we were going to get hurricane funding, with Democrat votes next week. So the president just sped things along. I mean, he was pragmatic about this. The fact of the matter is we were not going to send the president a spending cap deal, you know, with the debt ceiling increase like we should. So why not just cut to the chase and just, cut the deal now, you know, get the temporary increase. I'm hoping that come December, because this all, you know, the spending, temporary spending goes till December 8th. The debt ceiling goes till December 8th. That hopefully House leadership says, you know, now's the time to tackle this country's $20 trillion debt. It's time to put spending, to put the brakes on the spending, put automatic brakes if necessary, and to do that with the next debt ceiling increase. I'm hoping that happens. If it doesn't, then the president's just going to have to do deals with Chuck Schumer all over again.
I'm glad you said that, because I also see this. I see the silver lining here. Okay, it is a 3-month deal. I think it would be very hard to go into the mode that people thought we were going to have, where there's a potential shutdown of the government when you have all these natural disasters out there and the government's trying to respond to them. I think that would be it wouldn't work. I think the president pushing this down 3 months, I think it puts pressure on Republican leaders, both in the House and the Senate, to get with the program and come up and make some fundamental changes to the way our government operates in exchange for further raising of the debt ceiling. I think that's the best case scenario. But again, I guess the question everybody is asking who's watching this closely, what's the probability of that happening?
I don't think the probability is high, but at least there is a probability now. You know, had we passed a 2-year, because people were talking about a $2 trillion debt ceiling increase, which is actually mind-boggling just to think of that, then we wouldn't have had this discussion. This discussion would have been put on a back burner for 2 years. Now we're going to have this discussion again. I hope it yields, it yields some fruit this time. There's no excuse now for us, now that this is out of the way. The House is going to finish the appropriations bills for next year ahead of schedule. Again, before October 1st, we'll finish it either tomorrow or early next week, send it over to the Senate. There's no excuse for the House now not to take up tax reform. and then to deal long-term with spending reforms that put us on the right fiscal path.
The outcome of this could be good if, in fact, that does occur. Let's say it doesn't. I mean, you know, the only thing that makes me very uncomfortable is that usually good things do not happen in December because other than Santa Claus coming. And the version of Santa Claus up here is never good. And with that backdrop, people are wanting just to get out of town, and they often just do whatever is necessary so they can get on the plane and get back home.
Well, Tony, that's why I'm surprised this deal wasn't cut until December 20th instead of December
True.
8th. We're scheduled to be in the week following that. Obviously, it's you know, it's still 2.5 weeks before Christmas, December 8th. So I'm hoping that something gets done now. And if it doesn't, to be honest with you, we're just going to have to look forward to the 2018 elections to send some people to Washington who are seriously interested in dealing with this country's fiscal problems. We are just whistling past the graveyard right now.
Where will the Freedom Caucus come down on this?
Well, we insist that any debt ceiling increase be includes structural spending changes. And we are not against raising the debt ceiling. As you know, you have to raise the debt ceiling. But we think that any debt ceiling increase has to be accompanied by long-term structural changes in spending. And we think that's the fiscally responsible path to take. We honestly think that's probably the path the president wishes that we would take. And we're just going to need some leadership to lead us in that direction.
Well, we agree with that. I think that's what needs to happen. And we'll be following this very closely. Andy Harris, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Tony.
If you want to find out more about Congressman Harris, just head on over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, while you're there, sign up for Tony's Washington Update. It's a daily email highlighting the important issues affecting your faith, family, and freedom. And if you find the weekend edition of Washington Watch informative and useful, we'd encourage you to tell your friends about Washington Watch. You can help us reach more people with this radio ministry by supporting our efforts and heading over to TonyPerkins.com and clicking on the donate button. Well, that's it for this week's show. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 866-372-7234.